Hello again, this is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that I will be in Australia and New Zealand in another month or so, in case anybody wants to take any of my classes over there. I'm leaving here the end of September, and I'll be in New Zealand for the first 2 weeks in October. I'll be doing lectures and a class in Wellington. Then I go on to Australia, and I'll be doing classes, lectures, and expos in Melbourne, Perth, and Sydney. So if anybody is interested in signing up for these classes, go on my website, and it'll on the schedules part, it will give you all of the contact numbers and people you need to get a hold of. And my website is www.ozarkmountain.com. That's OZARKMT.com. And you'll find more out about the contact numbers and the dates I'll be in those places. Okay. Let me give out the toll-free number in case anybody does want to call in tonight. The toll-free number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. But everybody always tells me they'd rather listen than call in, so we'll just see what happens. I have a very special guest tonight, and it shows you what a small world this is anyway. But this man is David Donald, and I met him first a few months ago when I was in Montreal. And then I met him again just a few weeks ago when I returned to Montreal. And David is a filmmaker, makes documentaries. I said on his list, on his bio, it would take way too long to go over all of the awards he has won, all of the many, many things he has been involved with, as a producer, director, making documentaries. Said he'd been involved in many, many National Geographic specials, Sesame Street, just many of these, and he has taught computer animation, so he is a man of multi-talents. But one thing I thought was strange, that it shows what a small world it is, was when I first met him, we have mutual friends, that he also knows Arun Gandhi, and if those who have listened to the show know that I've had Arun on the show before, he is the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, and one of my company's authors. And he also knows Arun because he's working on a documentary about Mr. Gandhi. So it's a small world. It just seems like, I don't know if it has to do with the metaphysical field or what, but we keep running into people who know each other. Well, David was in Montreal, and he alternates between Montreal and Hawaii. And now he's back in Hawaii again. So we'll be speaking to him tonight from Hawaii. Okay, Dave, you there?
I am indeed, Dolores.
And you're in the beautiful, are you on a beach or what are you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm about, about 100 yards away from the beach looking at the Pacific Ocean and palm trees waving in the breeze.
Lucky
we're in
you.
Sleepy little town of Waialua, which is kind of a surfer's beach resort.
I see you're on the island of Oahu right now, aren't you?
That's right, on the northwest shore.
Mm-hmm. So you want to get away from the big cities anyway.
Well, partly that, but it's also that a lot of the subjects that I like to film are here in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
And this just happens to be one of the little towns that we found that we fell in love with that, and made a lot of good friends here. So we come here on a regular basis and use this as our base of operations to travel around the islands and film different stories.
I know when I've been over there, it's a big difference between that and being in the big city.
Oh, yes.
The tourists.
Although Honolulu is getting quite quite busy, so we try and stay out of Honolulu as often as possible.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. It's all tourists and totally different than when you get away from that.
That's right, and 12 lanes of traffic.
Yeah, I've been on the Big Island more than Honolulu. But you know all those places, I guess, over there.
Well, we were just on the Big Island, as a matter of fact, just a week ago.
Uh-huh.
We went there for 4 days to visit some friends.
At Kona?
Kona's side, up towards the top, we were staying with friends on a ranch called Kohala Ranch. Beautiful.
I've been up at Volcano. That's up there, that little town up there.
That's right. That would be further south. That's in the rainforest area right next to the Volcanoes National Park.
Uh-huh.
And that's an absolutely beautiful, mystical, magical rainforest.
Yes, it is. It's like being in two places. It's a strange because you can just go a little further, and it's like the moonscape.
That's right, yeah.
From
well, you always know when you're in a Hawaiian rainforest because you can look up and see the sky.
Yes.
And unlike
but it's
the,
like two direct opposites, the rainforest and then just like the moonscape.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
But it is a beautiful place.
It's a magnificent place, and we enjoy it. And we find that, well, as you know, I think there's something like 13 ecosystems in the world, and 11 of them exist on the Big Island alone.
Yes. That's what a lot of people don't realize. There's snow-capped mountains right there in Hawaii.
There are indeed. January and February, you can find quite a few feet of snow on top of Mauna Kea.
Yeah, it's quite a place. But it just seems funny. A few weeks ago, we were in Montreal, and it wasn't cold, but it was chilly, so it's a little different than where you are now.
It is, and it's warmer than usual here, so I think there might be some fact to global warming, because it seems to be playing with all of the normal weather patterns that we remember.
Yeah. The same where I am in Arkansas, too. We're right now having a very hot weather. So, I don't know. We don't know what to expect anymore.
We don't.
But as I was saying, you have so many awards, and you have done so much with your life that it would take way too long to go through all of it. And you did say in the email you sent me that you'd really like to look forward, you know, instead of looking back anyway.
Well, that's right. I mean, the awards that you're speaking about was when I was in the special effects industry, creating computer-generated special effects for television commercials, television series, and some feature films, and
and
that was fine, and it was all very interesting. But now I'm much more interested in the subject matter of some of the documentaries that we're exploring. The one that you mentioned, we're working on a documentary regarding Arun Gandhi and from his perspective, the teachings that he received from his grandfather.
Yes.
In the years that he was in India.
Uh-huh.
And we had also wanted very much to include Sunanda in those documentaries, but,
Yes, I think the people who really know Arun know that his wife Sunanda died about last Christmas.
That's right.
And she'd been sick for quite a while, though.
Yes, she had. And I was about to say unfortunately, but there's a purpose in everything, so
yes,
she's where she is now for a reason.
Well, Arun told me she died in India.
That's correct, yes.
And so he had to go there right afterwards.
Yes.
She was with him for so long and was such a good helpmate to him throughout his life.
She was an absolutely wonderful and beautiful woman, extremely bright and talented.
But, you know, I usually go into a lot of background here, but why did you decide to do a documentary about Arun?
You know, it's call it serendipity, call it fate. We were in Waialua, several years back. It was just a few months after September 11th. A friend of ours, who is a kahuna here in Hawaii.
Yeah, I think it's the same kahuna that I know, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah, we have another mutual friend over there for the listeners, anyway. Small world.
It is. And she married Ann and I, actually, here in Hawaii.
Yeah, she's a beautiful woman, this kahuna healer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. And so she was asked, Arun was apparently appearing at the Unity Church in Diamond Head, and she was asked to give a Hawaiian blessing at the beginning of the talk. And she called us up and asked if we would be available to film. And I said, of course. And she explained that Arun was there, and I asked if it would be possible to interview Arun. And she found out for me, and he consented graciously. And so we met during that time, and I interviewed him for approximately 40 minutes, one-on-one, and then we filmed a two-hour lecture, and we have some clips of that up on our website. And one thing I'd like to say is at the very beginning of those clips on our website, you can see Sunanda, his wife,
yeah,
in the opening intro, and you can see how remarkably beautiful she was. And also the Kahuna Paihia is with her son Keiku are also in that opening as well, and you can see parts of the blessing. But that's how we originally met, and since then we've stayed in touch by phone and by email, and we're just formulating the documentary and the storyline and making the arrangements, and eventually we'll start shooting.
Because you did tell me a few weeks ago, it takes quite a bit of time to put one of these together from start to finish.
Well, it does, and there's just my wife and I. There's no massive organization behind us, and we're self-funded, so things take a little longer.
But, you know, it's a lot of dedication, and I appreciate people who do follow their dream.
Well, you know, it's when we had both left our previous careers behind, we were making a decision for our future, and we asked ourselves what we wanted to do for the rest of our lives, and what we wanted to do was chase our own dreams rather than someone else's.
Yeah.
And so we identified what our dreams were. And that's what we've been doing ever since. We've been traveling and meeting wonderful and interesting people like yourself and learning something new every day, and we're just trying to share our experiences with others.
Uh-huh. But let me go back to the beginning for a minute. How did you ever get involved in all of this? What led you in that direction with the filmmaking and the animation? Animation. Made you decide to go that way?
Well, I guess I had always been involved with, when I was a child, I was involved with models, model making, and model railroads, and model cars, and model ships, and model planes. And
yeah.
That was something when I was very, very young, and I just enjoyed it. And I remember using cameras, my dad's camera from work, to take photos of and try and set them up so they were realistic-looking scenes within the photograph. And then all of that sort of disappeared, and I ended up getting into the music industry. And
I forgot to mention that. You were very involved in that for a while, too, weren't you?
For quite some time, and until I was in my early 30s, I was involved in the music industry. And at that point, I hit a crossroads. I came to a crossroads in my life. And I just happened to walk into a friend's store where he was selling video cameras and portable VHS recorders. And I picked one up. And I couldn't put it down. And after about 2 hours in his store and bothering all his customers, filming everyone, I ended up buying it and leaving the store with it.
Uh-huh.
And that was in the early 1980s. And from there till the end of the 1980s, I progressed rapidly and opened up a production company and produced all kinds of videos. And I went to some adult education courses at Dawson College in Montreal and about production video, video production and video editing. And I was you had to fill out this sheet at the end of the course to evaluate how you felt about the course. And I said, well, the teacher was great, but the content was weak. I could have absorbed much more in the allotted time. And I also noted, I said, I think I could give this course. And so I got a call a few weeks later from the department head, and he said, so you think you could give this course? And I said, yes, I do. And so he came by and saw my setup, my little video studio, and he realized that I wasn't bluffing, and so we talked, and he asked me to prepare some course outlines, and I did, and submitted them to him. And a few months later, I found myself teaching adult education courses at Dawson College in Montreal on video production, video editing.
Mm.
And
not what you thought you were going to be doing.
No. I mean, I just keep on stumbling into these things, and so from there it progressed. And
well, you know, we know there is no coincidences.
That's right.
Everything happens for a reason. Even at the time, it may seem strange.
That's right. And so
go in a different direction.
Well, and I like a good story.
Yeah.
And storytelling has always been very interesting to me. So from there, I started a fairly large video studio. I borrowed a lot of money and researched all of the equipment and technology, and I started quite a large facility in Montreal, thinking that I was going to be able to use the facility to produce all the stories that I wanted to create. And, of course, reality got in the way, and I had to work for a lot of clients to keep the staff paid. And
oh, yeah, you always got to pay the bills.
And keep the doors open. And so during that time, we just became very successful, and we started winning awards, and we got more clients, and we just kept on growing, and the dream of creating my own stories or filming stories that interested me was continually pushed back into the distance, into the background. And then I had an opportunity to sell that company in the mid-90s, which I did. And from that point on, then everything changed. I started to pull back out of the industry. My parents were both in their final years, and I moved from Los Angeles back to Montreal and to be with them. And
uh-huh.
During that time, I met my wife.
You know, and Anne is a beautiful woman, and she's really a very good support for you.
Well, she is. She's the brains. I'm the brawn. She's the brains.
Oh, you okay? All right. She'd like to know that, I think.
So, we met, and the story of how we met. Actually, I like that story.
Go ahead. If we still got a half hour, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was working in Hollywood for a couple of years. After I sold my company in '94, they asked me to move down to Los Angeles and open up offices. I sold to a public company, so they wanted offices in Los Angeles. So they sent me down to Los Angeles, and we had facilities at Raleigh Studios. And Raleigh Studios are right across the street from the famous Paramount Studios. Raleigh is less known, but in Hollywood history, it's much more famous because they're the original Mary Pickford Studios.
Oh,
so
okay.
They're probably the oldest Hollywood studios around, or one of the eldest. And so what was interesting was I was at this very prestigious studio, very prestigious offices, surrounded by movie stars and famous people, and you know, was provided a very luxurious car to drive and very luxurious home on the beach in Marina Del Rey. So I was living the life of Riley, as we like to say.
Yeah, all the perks.
All the perks. And my cousins showed up from Montreal, and Helen and Joe. Helen's my first cousin and her husband, Joe. And Joe was just an absolutely wonderful man, and but a kidder. He was Irish. And so he was a kidder. And I was giving them a tour through Hollywood, which I had, you know, come to know quite well, in the history of Hollywood. And we were driving around. And, you know, they had sat for lunch beside Pierce Brosnan and Smokin' Joe Frazier and Neil Diamond, and all of these various celebrities were in the commissary. And they got a taste of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And as we were driving the car down Hollywood Boulevard, my cousin Joe turned to me in a very gruff Irish manner, implied that I was a big shot with a fancy car, a fancy job, and a fancy home, but I didn't have a girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And so he implied, you know, that I wasn't so fancy after all. And and I turned back to him and I quipped, "Well, I don't see you doing anything about it," gruffly. And
yeah.
He was taken aback by my remark, and I just meant it in the same fun that he was poking at me.
Yeah.
And he fell silent, and I looked at his wife in the back seat, and she was just chuckling, and I was wondering in my mind, you know, have I insulted him? You know, did he take it the wrong way? And I just concentrated on driving, fighting the Santa Monica Freeway back home to Marina Del Rey, and it's about a 45-minute drive, and he was silent the whole way, and I was really getting quite nervous. So we got back to the beach and parked the car and got upstairs, and I was going through my routine of emptying my pockets onto the dining room table. And all of a sudden, he snapped his fingers, and he said, "Anne." And my cousin Helen said, "Oh, yes." And those were the first words they had said in 45 minutes. And they picked up the phone, and they contacted their daughter, who then picked up the phone and contacted Anne in Paris, France.
Oh, she was over there.
She was living in France. And asked her what she was doing, and Anne said at that moment, "Well, as a matter of fact, my visa just ran out after 7 years. I'm coming home to Montreal in a few months," which coincided with when I was returning from Los Angeles. And so we agreed that we would meet when we got back to Montreal at a barbecue, and we got back to Montreal. And my cousin's daughter phoned me up and said, "I know I was supposed to have the barbecue so that you guys could meet, but I'm leaving for a six-week trip tomorrow to Thailand, so here's her number. Good luck." So
yeah,
I called, and we met on July 7th, 1996, and we have not been apart ever since.
You know, and all of that was pure coincidence, you know that.
You think?
Uh-huh. So that'd be, yeah, that's over 10 years now you've been together.
Well, that's right. We've, in fact, it's 11 years this July.
Uh-huh.
And we just celebrated our 8th wedding anniversary. So it's been wonderful. So we just were unbelievably compatible, and we've been through a lot. Together, the passing of my parents, and that really acted as a catalyst for me to start exploring my own spirituality a lot more, and it also was the catalyst for us to pursue our dreams.
you know, I think that takes a lot to give up all of that, you know, all the creature comforts, all the material things, than to just turn to do a complete turnaround.
Well, there was a lot to give up.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You're right about that. We really did give a lot up, but we gained much more. Much more happiness, more love, and what we have now is real. It's not. It's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based on who's who or what award has someone just recently won, or are they in the newspaper or whatever. And so you know we both took some time off and traveled around. Mostly around the Southwest, and went to a lot of national parks, a lot of wilderness areas. We also went to Paris, and we came to Hawaii, and we were standing on a beach on the north shore of Kauai, and it was odd because it is probably one of the most spectacular. I think National Geographic calls Kauai the most beautiful island in the world. And
isn't that the one they call the Mother Island?
They call it the Garden Isle.
The Garden Island.
The Garden Isle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's so lush and rains frequently in the interior. In fact, the center of Kauai is the wettest place in the world.
Mm.
They have 40 feet of rain annually in the center of the mountains. But we were on the North Shore, very, very beautiful, and Anne was just taking it all in, and I, on the other hand, was kicking the sand. And I was frustrated. And in this most magnificent, beautiful spot in the world, I was just bothered by something. And she asked me what was wrong, and I said, what do you want to do for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
And that led to a conversation, and we identified that we wanted to travel, we wanted to meet interesting people, and we wanted to learn something new every day, and we wanted to share our experiences, and it had to have something to do with the Internet. And so that's when our idea of creating our own broadcast network on the Internet came to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I was going to get to, because David has its own, it's a television network on the Internet, isn't it?
Well, it's in its...
you can probably explain better than I can.
It's in its infancy. That's the objective, is to be exactly what you just said.
Well, it's called DHD TV.
That's correct.
But go ahead and tell us what that is.
Well, the concept was to create these films in different form, in documentary form, in television series form, and to post them on the Internet for free so that people could watch them. And we kept on filming, but we were having a hard time getting the films up onto the Internet. A lot of it had to do with the technology, bandwidth expenses, things like that, but also just the software to create these films. And, of course, we didn't have any funding, so that was an issue. But we still kept on filming every time we traveled. So now we've got hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of footage, thousands of clips. And a friend of mine was talking to me from Los Angeles. He was in the industry, professional. And he said, you should check out this consumer software because it's easy for old guys like us to remember how to use. And so I did, and it happened to, be very easy to use, and I started taking some courses last November, and by March 1st, coincidentally St. David's Day, for all the Irish out there, we launched DHDTV.net, and we just have, I think there's 8 or 9 clips up right now. A couple on Arun Gandhi, and one on Tai Chi, and one on a Southwest artist, and a couple on, two or three on cooking, and one on the environment for children.
Uh-huh.
And we're just busy right now editing more clips, and as soon as we edit more clips, we post them on the website and put them up. And we're putting them up in the form so that you can either watch them on your computer, or you can download them onto your video iPod, or nowadays there's these video iPhones. And also, I think Apple has something they call Apple TV. And so you can watch it on your television set if you own one of those boxes.
Mm.
And we're just making it available that way. And we don't have any sponsorship. We don't have a huge business plan. We're just going ahead with our dream and trusting that it'll all work out.
So really, you haven't had it up very long then, if it just started last November.
The work on it just started last November. We actually only put the website up March 1st.
Oh, so it hasn't been very long at all.
Not long at all. So it's really in its infancy, and I suspect September, October, we're going to see quite a growth spurt.
The people that we're broadcasting over now, VBS Radio, they can identify with this readily. I know because Don started out with a dream, same as you,
mm-hmm.
wanted the Metaphysical Radio Network. And it began to grow to such proportions that it got out of control, is what he said. It just kept growing and growing. You had to keep getting more and more sophisticated hardware and software to keep adapting to it.
Well, BBS is far advanced over our humble little operation.
Oh, yeah, but it has only been. See, I've been with this show now almost 2 years, and it just started out before that, and it's grown tremendously just in a short length of time. And he's the same way. He's had to put everything, his heart and soul and everything into it. So I think the two of you are on the same path as far as a dream is concerned.
Well, and I think we're getting a lot of help, quite frankly. We're looking for help from different sources.
Uh-huh.
In the past, I would have looked for help from bankers and investors and lawyers and accountants, and now we're looking more towards spiritual help.
He felt, too, Don Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you have to believe in something. If you believe in something, it must become a reality because it's the law of the universe.
And,
especially if you go at it unselfishly for what you really want to create.
This is it. I have lots of business friends that look at me strangely and say, now, what are you doing again? And how are you going to make money?
Now, that always boils down to how you're going to live, how you're going to make money.
And I say, well, we have this little online internet hardware store, and we sell things like MailFlots, and whatever money we make from that, we pour into this, which is what we call the fun stuff.
Because it takes money to produce these things, too.
That's right, yeah. And they look at me a little strangely, and they are perplexed that I would start something like this without formal business plan and investors and cash flows and projected income statements and all of the rest of it. But
you've been there, done that.
That's right. And when my parents crossed, there were a lot of events that occurred and personal experiences that I had that changed my life forever. And changed my thinking, and also gave me confidence that everything was going to turn out all right.
Uh-huh.
And that was a gift that my parents left for me. And they died slowly from Parkinson's and cancer over a period of about 10 years.
Oh.
And so there was a lot of hospitalization, and during that time, it was difficult, but after they were gone, it suddenly occurred to me that I had been privileged. They gave me a gift in their passing. They took away my fear of dying.
Oh, okay.
They allowed me to to witness how they passed away. And it was so elegant and dignified, and just there was something wonderful about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they reacted to it, and they really took away my fear of dying and made me feel content within myself if I left now, if I was gone this instant or tomorrow, that would be fine. Or if I live another 150 years, that would be fine too.
Yeah.
But that worry left me, and I was able to focus on what I really wanted to do. And risk became less of an issue. And I just had this confidence that everything would turn out all right. So those experiences were very powerful experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And provided the impetus for me to go forward with our dreams.
But see, it's the same with me, too, with my company. You know, I've just done it on faith alone, and I think that's what we do. You know, we really believe in something.
Well, I think you're an unbelievably remarkable woman.
Well, you know, everything is hard work, but we have to love it and believe what we do.
Just listening to your travel schedule, your upcoming travel schedule, I was getting tired.
But, you know, we do have to do it without financing, without support. You just have to keep going at what you really believe in.
You do, and there's always going to be 1,000 naysayers. I mean, I'm surrounded by my colleagues who look at me and seriously think that there's something wrong. And yet they
keep progressing. That's because we're not in the rat race that they are in. But, you know, I think we're all a lot happier.
Much happier.
Because we're doing what we want.
Well, I'm looking at the Pacific Ocean right now.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling the trade wind breeze of Hawaii. And
well, in a couple of months, I'm going to be in Tahiti.
Exactly.
On the way to Australia, New Zealand.
Well, I think we should meet up and go to a nice French restaurant there.
I'm going to do a stop over there. I don't like to take those long flights. You know, it shows. People say, how can you afford to do all of this? Well, it just happens.
It does. It just happens.
Uh-huh.
And, in fact, we plan everything out on a board, and we say, what do we want to accomplish this year? Where do we want to go? Who do we want to meet? And we make a collage of words and pictures and visualize it, just like an Olympic athlete will stand, you know, at the top of a ski hill and picture all the curves and the bumps and everything else he or she is about to ski down through.
Yeah.
And they'll rehearse it in their mind, or you know, swimmers rehearsing a race or anything like that. We visualize what we want to accomplish this year and by what month, and miraculously it happens.
Yeah, and that's it, because so I tell people that you first have to have the goal and focus on the goal.
That's right.
And it must happen. It's the law of the universe if you can visualize it and see it.
That's right, and that's why that moment on the North Shore of Kauai was so important for us, because I was frustrated, and I was surrounded by paradise. I was in paradise.
But you couldn't see it.
But I couldn't see it because I didn't understand what I wanted to do with the rest of my life,
mm-hmm.
and that was bothering me.
Mm.
And, you know, if you're in a company or in a corporation, you know, quite clearly they'll decide for you all the benchmarks you have to achieve that year.
Yeah, but so, it's their dream.
It's their dream.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's your dream, that onus is upon you. You have to create those benchmarks. You have to decide, well, where do I want to go? Where do I want to be? Who do I want to be? Who do I want to be with? What do I want to be doing? And what do I want to accomplish? And my goal was, I mean, don't get me wrong, I always enjoy an abundance of money.
Yeah.
But it was not the number one priority on my list of accomplishments. It was I wanted to travel, to meet people, to record these stories, to share them with other people, and at the same time to be appropriately rewarded financially for these for this work.
Yeah.
So it was concurrent, but it didn't take precedent. I didn't want to become a millionaire for the sake of being a millionaire.
Yeah, and that's where too much of it goes, and they just end up with heart attacks and everything because they're just working towards something, and then when they get there, then what?
Then what? That's right. Uh-huh. And so that moment on Kauai was very important because with that beautiful, surrounded by that beautiful scenery.
Uh-huh.
And together with Anne, we were able to question ourselves in the serenity of the nature and be able to accurately identify what we really wanted to do and accomplish.
Those are the crossroads, as I call them. Everybody has them in their life, and you can go many different directions.
That's right.
And your life would be different, no matter what choice you pick.
You're absolutely right.
Well, in your email here, I like what you said. You said, basically, I was fed up with corporate networks lowering the bar.
Yes.
Continually putting up trash on the air.
Yeah.
Affects our youth and the entire population. And, the big corporations contributing to the dumbing down of America.
That's right.
So that's why you wanted to get out of that part.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to contribute to that at all. Unlike what they constantly argue in the media, I do believe that what goes on television and what goes on in the theaters does affect youth. They do take a lead from that, and it can affect them negatively.
Yes.
And, for instance, reality television, there's some interesting reality shows, home makeover shows, or, there's some fun, entertaining shows which actually teach you something, but by and large, many of the reality television shows are basically the humiliation of the few for the gratification of the many.
Yes, you're right.
And that's something I just don't want to participate in at all. I think it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really contributes negatively to American society and to Americans, and especially to American children.
And so, a lot of the so-called comedy shows, I don't think are funny at all.
No. It quite often, the comedy is based on humiliation.
Yeah, or sexual, or something that it's not really funny. Not like the old days when there were real comedians out there.
I tend to agree. But, I just think that it's really important to, I'm not here to say, I'm not here to try and stop others from producing what they want. But
yeah,
here to produce.
Everybody's allowed to do what they want.
I'm here to produce what I think will contribute. And, there was a very well-known educational television network that one time told me to my face that my educational television series for children was too educational. So when a vice president of a network says that to your face, you wonder who you're talking to.
Too educational.
So,
what did they mean? Did they think it was over the children's head, or what?
What they, I think it took so much breath out of my lungs that I didn't really pursue it more than just to say, thank you for sharing your comments with me. I appreciate your time. Goodbye.
The same idea. It's talking down to the to the consumer, to the person who is watching any shows, if they have that kind of an attitude.
Yeah, I don't. I think that today television networks are filled with people that, here's the difference. The difference is, I know we're running close to the end, but I just wanted to share this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Public corporations really affect how you can work and how you can produce products and services, because they're traded on the stock market, and today with computers, they're traded every few seconds.
Yeah.
And so their fortunes can rise and fall dramatically to the tune of millions, tens of millions, even in billions of dollars on such a rapid basis that corporate executives have to measure every single word they speak publicly, much like world leaders. And so the people that run the television networks, today all the networks are all publicly owned. Maybe there's some private networks left, but they're few and far between. And so when you approach any of these networks with an idea, you're basically speaking to a very young person who's earning a six-figure salary, who's fresh out of college, has a $500,000 home with a big mortgage and a fancy car, and is still pinching himself that he found this job right out of college.
Yeah.
But they're also aware that there's 200 people standing outside their office door ready and willing to fill his position should he not be able to continue.
Yeah, make the wrong choice or whatever.
That's right. And so the pressure is humongous that they should not make the wrong choice. And God forbid the ratings will fall. Because if the ratings fall, the advertising falls. If the advertising falls, the revenue falls. If the revenue falls, the stock market price falls. And all of this happens in the blink of an eye. So the pressure,
they don't have enough confidence in their own judgment.
Exactly. And so they're frightened. And so what they do is they look at what the other 25-year-old program director is doing at the other network. And imagine this circle of people all looking at each other and all waiting for someone to make the first move.
Uh-huh.
And so somebody stumbled into reality television half a dozen years ago by accident.
Yeah.
And what they found was suddenly they had no actors' salaries to pay, no set designer salaries to pay, no set locations to pay, no props to pay. Their expenses just dropped dramatically, and their profit margins shot up like a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're earning much more profit from a reality show than when they had to produce everything. And as reality dies down in its popularity, and the demand for production increases, we'll probably eventually see a shift back that way. But how much of a shift back that way, it's unknown right now, because how do you go to a shareholder of a public corporation and say, you know, we've been having a good run for the last 7 years and you've been making 70% profit, but now we have to go back to the old days of producing TV shows where we're only making 20 or 30% profit? Shareholders are not going to want to hear this.
No, they won't.
So these public networks, these public corporations, rather, are really they're facing a shift in the future, and it's going to be interesting to see how that happens. And that was largely responsible for us not really having much success in trying to get our shows on the air, just because our shows were just too expensive to produce.
Yeah.
Isn't
this also part of the rise of the independent film networks, too?
Well, that's it. And so because we had great response, I mean, they all thought our shows were great. They just didn't want to pay us, very much money for them. And PBS wanted to take one of our shows, but were only able to offer us a couple of minutes of advertising that we could sell in return.
Yeah.
So, which is not necessarily a bad deal, but it's just a tough long gone are the days where a network will say, sure, we understand each episode will cost $100,000 and we're willing to fund that. That's gone. So instead, we just decided, well, we've got our little internet hardware store. We'll take whatever profits we have. We'll film our shows and our documentaries as we can, and we'll make them available to the public, and you know, God willing, people will like them and something will happen and we'll figure out how we'll fund the future.
Mm-hmm. That's very much like what Don Newsom has done.
Yeah.
And like he said, it is it's really taken him by tremendous surprise. So, but let's just talk about your network. Tell people how they can get on, you know, and check these things out on the website.
Well,
it is on
all
the
I have to remember
television
is...
shows, but they are on the internet.
That, well, right now they're just little clips. They're clips
yeah.
from anywhere from 3 to 8 minutes in length.
Okay.
And we're going to continue to put clips up, you know, anywhere from 3 to, say, 10 minutes in length. And we'll start posting a lot of them probably come September. Right now we just sort of have teasers up. But come
okay.
September we'll start to really earnestly post them on a regular basis.
Okay, tell them the name of the website.
It's dhdtv.net.
dhdtv.net.
.net.
Mm-hmm.
And we own .com and .org and .ca and et cetera. So if they make a mistake, they'll still get there.
They'll find it eventually.
Yeah.
Well, what if someone wants to get a hold of you or wants to correspond with you?
There's on the website, there's a little link at the bottom of every page that says email us, and they can just click on that, and that'll open up their email application, and it'll already have our email address embedded into their email program, and
mm-hmm.
they can just type in their message and send it to us.
Yeah, and that's the first step anyway, is getting people to watch and get them interested in it.
That's right.
And while you're out there on your sunny beach, and you're going to be, you'll be working while you're over there too. I know that.
Yes, we have all of our camera equipment, our sound equipment
yeah,
here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And
so
in fact, there's a magnificent monk seal, a rare endangered species, on the beach where we're located right now, who's come
uh-huh.
to visit us and lie on the beach. 7-foot-long monk seal.
Mm.
They're quite rare. So you know, we're just going to. Anne's a marine biologist, as you know, and. So we've been filming.
You've had a lot of experience doing the National Geographic special, so this is right up your alley.
Right. Well, with the National Geographic, what we did was mostly the special effects and the computer animation and the show openings.
All right.
But
anyway, if people are interested, that's the first step, is getting them to watch, to click in on the website and become interested.
And I would ask them to watch the two video clips on Arun Gandhi.
Okay.
I think that what he has to say is absolutely fantastic, and I think everyone can learn something from watching those two clips.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's a fantastic man.
Yeah.
But I do applaud you for following your dream, and I know it's going to go somewhere. You probably have no idea what's going to happen, but it's all out there. I always say, give it to the universe and let them take it and run with it, you know?
Well, that's it. And hopefully we'll be able to meet up in Tahiti.
Who knows? But anyway, it's an honor to have you on the show, David.
Well, the honor is mine.
And I appreciate you coming on and sharing all this. And who knows, you may inspire others out there who are sitting on the crossroads at the fence wondering should they pursue their dream.
Well, you never know, and if that's what we accomplished, then that's a wonderful thing.
And we never know. Okay, but thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Well, thank you, and as we say here, aloha, Doris.
Yes, aloha, and I know I'm going to meet you again. It's our paths keep crossing.
Well, that's right, and Doris, I want to thank you again for inviting us, and I look forward to the next time we meet, because every time we meet, it's always a wonderful, wonderful time.
All right. And thank you. And say goodnight to Anne, too.
I will.
All right.
Thank you very much, Dolores.
Okay. And I'm saying goodnight now to all of our listeners.